Good morning. I hope you're enjoying this nice weather, and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. We have a variety of announcements this morning about church life and activities. There will be an informational meeting on the Northwest Earth Institute courses that will be offered this fall next Sunday after coffee. See this month's newsletter for details. Registration for religious education classes begins today. Please stop in the social hall after the service to register your child. You do not have to be a member to register your child for RE classes. If you have any questions, please see Carrie Duma, our Director of Religious Education, who will be at the table after the service. I'm sorry, I don't think I introduced myself. I'm Chris Pesky, the representative from the board today. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you are a visitor with us this morning, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger at the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on the table about church life and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service to answer any questions about our church. Or if you have been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to answer those questions as well. If you are visiting us with children today, it is our custom for the children to remain in the service until after the offertory, at which time they go through their religious education classes. Today is an intergenerational service, so the children will be staying through the entire service today. If you're visiting, your child is traditionally welcomed to attend RE courses, and you are invited to go with them. If you would like to view the goings-on. If there are any visitors here who feel comfortable introducing themselves, now would be a good time to do that so we can warmly welcome you.
I'd like to introduce my father, Bill Kremel. He's visiting from Chicago.
Welcome. Welcome.
Jim Moss and Mary Beth Moss visiting the First Universalist Unitarian Church of Hawaii.
Welcome.
George and Dean Risberg also from First Universalist Unitarian Church of Hawaii.
Welcome. Thank you. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather, discuss, for further discussion about the service. At this time, please put your cell phones on silence mode. I hope you find this morning service interesting and inspirational.
Food pantry? Are we doing food pantry?
Food pantry. This morning we're going to do a special food pantry collection for the Heartland Food Pantry.
Thank you.
There is nursery care available today. The nursery is located outside the main doors here and across the foyer. If you find the need for those services this morning. Our speaker presenter this morning is Dennis Hawk. Dennis is a Cherokee Meskwaki descendant, a pipe carrier, sweat lodge leader, a teacher of Native American spirituality. Dennis is a singer, songwriter, storyteller who plays guitar and Native American flute.
Just wanted to announce that Dennis will be available to meet with you after the service in the social hall, where he'll have CDs of his music available for sale. Now, welcome. I'd like to welcome all of you back after a somewhat abbreviated summer. In that vein, for our opening words, please turn to number 436 in your hymnal. I'll read the non-italicized, and the response, your response will be the italicized words. We come to this time and this place. To renew our faith in the holiness, goodness, and beauty of life. To rekindle the flame of memory and hope, and please remain seated for our chalice lighting. The words are in your openings in the order of service. May love shine forth through us today. You'll please rise as you're willing and able, and we'll do hymn number 8, Mother Spirit, Father Spirit. Spirit, Father, Spirit, we The offering is a sacrament of the Free Church. It is supported by the voluntary generosity of all who join with us. The offering will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values. Now is a sacred time in our service where we can share our joys and concerns with one another. If you have a joy or concern, please raise your hand. The host will bring a microphone and just give your first name and a brief statement of your joy and concern, and I'll light a candle for you. As is our tradition, I'll light our first candle and commemoration of lives lost in conflicts that persist in our world today.
My name is Diane, and I wanted to tell the community that Lois Kling, a member, passed away August 29th, Saturday, August 29th.
My name is Kathy. I have both a joy and a concern. My joy is I had knee replacement surgery 10 days ago, and I'm doing extremely well, and I'm very grateful for the marvels of modern medicine. My concern is how things will play out. This is a health-related concern as well. If we don't end up having a reasoned discussion about the future of healthcare reform in our country.
My name is Kelly. And I'd like you to light a candle for my brother and my family. My brother passed away also on August 29th, and we said goodbye to him yesterday. and especially for my father, who's taken this pretty hard. Thank you.
My name is Carlin, and could you please light a candle of concern for my aunt, who has Alzheimer's, and my friend Sharon, who is currently going through chemo for breast cancer. And could you also please light a candle of joy as we begin the school year for all the children and the fun that they will have this school year?
My name is Barbara, and I'd like you to please light a candle of concern for Obama with all the hate mongering that is going out against him right now. It just seems they want to destroy him, and they're willing to destroy the country with it, including education.
My name's Lynn. A candle of joy for our new minister, Reverend Jane Espenson. She'll be in the pulpit next week for our water communion, and she's very, very excited to be here and to meet everybody. And she does have office hours. If you'd like to meet her, stop in.
Could you light a candle of concern? My school district told me we were not allowed to show the president's welcome back to school speech.
My name is Ray, and I guess a candle of concern. I have a sister that's just finishing up. I guess she's had the chemo and now the radiation therapy, and should be finding out in the next few days how that's all come out.
Hi, my name is Beth, and a candle of joy. My parents, my mom and my stepdad, were struck by a car back at the beginning of August, and they are recovering and getting better with each day and each passing week, and we just went up and saw them again last weekend, and slowly but surely, my mom for sure is on the mend, and I'm hopeful that my stepdad will be as well. So a candle of joy for that.
Hi, my name is Teresa. Hi, my name's Teresa. I have a joy and a concern. A joy is that my mom had 5 surgeries last year for breast and thyroid cancer, and she had a suspicious on her mammogram, and she had a biopsy, and it came back negative, so we're done with all of it. But a friend of one of Corinne's best friends' uncles is not doing well this week, and his grandmother died, so we had a play date canceled today, and we're worried about their family.
I'm Anne. I'd like to light a candle of joy because it was my friend Gabby's birthday yesterday, Friday, and a candle of concern because my sister is having pretty major surgery on Tuesday at the Mayo Clinic.
My name's Yvonne, and would you light a candle for my mother, please, who at 88 last week had hip replacement surgery, and she came through it just fine. She will have limited mobility, and I'm trying to convince her that now is the time she gets to be treated like a queen and people will get to wait on her, but I don't know if she's buying it.
And a last candle for the joys and concerns not expressed today. Let us have a minute of silent meditation.
And now Dennis and Chris will present The Heart of a Buffalo.
It's been an interesting history. Back in the 60s, I brought a gospel choir from the inner city. I was co-pastoring a church in the inner city of Milwaukee at the time with Joe Elwanger. And we brought a choir to one of the UU churches, I think in Brookfield, I'm not sure. I'm telling a story on them anyway, so I don't want them to know. But anyway, so what we had to do is we had to edit out all the Jesus words. I would have come a long way in that amount of time, because I was doing a program for Roger Berkshausen in Appleton at the UU Fellowship there. And Roger wasn't there. He trusted me enough to come in and do a program without him being there. And so I started to launch into something, and I knew that the word God was going to be mentioned, so I didn't know whether I was on shaky ground or not. I'd become paranoid. And so I said, is it okay to say the word God here? And somebody piped up from the back, you can say anything you want to here. So we've come a long way. And it's so akin to what we believe in believe, I don't even think that's a good word, good choice of words. One of our most important concepts as Native Americans is Metakwesen, or in Denewalagen, in Ojibwe, which means we are all related. So when we're in that sweat lodge, we're not trying to find out who the heretics are in the group. We're really there to pray together. To be together, to pray together, to support one another through that lodge. And that is the essence, as I understand it, of the UU Fellowship as well. As we come from all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of beliefs, all kinds of differences, we know that we have this humanity in common, and that we are striving for spiritual life, and that those things keep us together in prayer and in strength. Now, having said that, what forgot to be mentioned is because I am a Squawky, I am Cherokee, I'm just a tad Irish and German too. You might not be able to tell that by looking at me, but that's true as well. And these things that I teach, I believe it's probably arrogant of anyone in this country to say that they are an expert on Native American spirituality, because there are 500 nations in this country, all of them different. And even among the nations, because I've been doing this for more than 20 years, I can go from one lodge to another on the same reservation, and you will find people doing things and saying things in an altogether different way. And the beauty of that is that we can look at life through different lenses. One of the commonalities is the medicine wheel. And you'll see that expressed today as well. And I think that's east, right?
Yep.
Okay. My directions. East, south, west, north. Okay. As long as I'm oriented somewhat, I'm okay. By the way, I'm really hampered. You little kids are going to miss something, because usually I'm up floating around all over the place. And I'm, because of my leg, I wanted to kind of stay stationary and move slowly so I don't knock things over and things of that nature. And I'm going to ask you to really stretch your imagination today. Now, I'm going to go into the character of someone named Black Elk, who lived in the 1860s in this country. Now, this is really a stretch of the imagination. First of all, you're looking at me. I don't look like Black Elk. Secondly, we've got all this equipment around us. But you know what? If Black Elk would have had it, he would have used it. I guarantee you. And so there's all these stretches, but I want you to do the best you can to go back with us, you know, 100 years, 100 and a half years ago, into a time when things were fairly difficult for those of us of Native blood. And go back in that time with me and hear this story in the good way that it was told. Out there that didn't understand what I was saying, let me explain. I was praying, and what I did is I invited all of the spirit people from all those directions over in that church place. They call those angels. We call them spirits. It's the same thing. But we invite those spirits to come in. And we want everybody present. So we invite them in from the east, from the south, from the north, from the west. We invite them in from the sky, those sky spirits. We invite Mother Earth spirits, all of the those Mother Earth spirits. We invite them in to be here with us to celebrate. And we invite the spirits represented here, the Ho-Cho-Ka Wa-Ka. But that Ho-Cho-Ka Wa-Ka, that sacred circle, is larger than the people that are just here. Because I heard those joys and concerns, because everybody here is related to somebody else out there. And so that circle grows larger. So as we pray in here, we represent a lot of people. But not only the people in this room, but the people who have gone before us. All of our ancestors are here as well.
So this room is full. It may look like there's some empty seats, but there are no empty seats. There's standing room only in this room right now, because all of the spirits have come to help us today. Aho.
That's kind of like the Native American amen. So, you know, if I say aho, then you get to aho back. So, aho.
Aho.
Took me a long time to learn that word. So, Te Hakasapa, Amachi Apielo, my name is Black Elk. And I was born in what you would say 1863. I was born in the month of the popping trees, which is December, you know, that time when the trees start to crack because it's getting so cold. And that's when I was born. And my father's name was Black Elk. His father's name was Black Elk. And his father before him, his name was Black Elk. So I was the fourth Black Elk. And they were all medicine men. And so I come from that long line of medicine people. And we were related to the Crazy Horse family as well. My father and Crazy Horse's father were cousins. And my mother's name was White Cow Sees, referring to not one of your Wisconsin cows, but referring to a buffalo cow. And my grandfather's name on my mother's side, his name was Refuses to Go. I love that name. And my grandmother's name on my mother's side, her name was Plenty Eagle Feathers. In 1863, four Crow Indians were killed. And it was a tough time in our history because it was the time that we as the last people under Crazy Horse, we stayed out while everybody else went into the forts. And I remember Crazy Horse well. We all had a lot of respect for him. He was one of these men who would go out for days on vision quests to find out what should happen with his people. He stayed in prayer a great deal. And he was a man who was not showy. He was a chief. He had a white horse and with black dots painted on this horse to stand for hail and a yellow thunderbolt down his cheek. And over his left ear, he wore an eagle feather. Very simple man, related to the thunders, that hail and lightning. And he had a vision that he couldn't be shot by the white man's bullets. And so one of his war tricks was that he would sneak up on a fort and he would be right within rifle range. Yeah, that's outside of rifle range. And he and about seven or eight of the warriors would parade up and down. And, you know, they would do that for a while. And finally, the long knives would get really ticked off, you know. So they'd all mount up, 30 or 40 of them, and they'd go chasing after Crazy Horse and his buddies. And they'd lead him right into a valley, and over top of the hill there'd be about 1,000 Lakota, you know, waiting. And he did this over and over and over. And the long knives never quite got it. And so I said he was the last one to come into the forts. And the people were afraid, the chiefs were afraid. Red Cloud and the other chiefs were afraid when he came in. With us, with our bunch, because they were afraid there would be an uprising. You know, that great day that he came in, and the chief said to him, they said, Crazy Horse, why did it take you so long to come into the forts? He just looked up and he said, why'd you come in so soon? So they were afraid of him, and so what they decided to do after about a half a day is they decided to put him in jail. But he wasn't about to go. And so they tried to take him captive. and he wasn't going to spend his life in a cage. So he fought back, and so he was stabbed by a Lakota soldier with a bayonet and died way later that afternoon. It was a sad story. And it was during that time that we, as the people, were all gathered up then, and we were supposed to be put on these little reserves, you know, these little settlements, like islands of people, and live like the white man lived. We didn't know how to live like the white man lived, but they were going to have us live that way. And so they did. They gathered us in these little crowds. There was going to be one group under Whitetail, another group under Red Cloud, and so we were going on our way, but we didn't want to go. So a bunch of us escaped, and we were going to go back to that place on the Powder River where we used to be happy. And so we headed toward the Powder River, and when we got to the Powder River, we looked down, and all we could feel was the sadness of all of our lost kin, because it wasn't the way it used to be. And so we felt sad, and so we decided that we'd go under it up to grandmother's country up in Canada, and we'd live with Sitting Bull and his people up there. So we took off real fast and went up to grandmother's country, and we stayed there. It was cold up there. It was very, very cold up there. Before I launch into that, though, I wrote a song about Crazy Horse. It's called The Warrior's Heart. You know, I think of Crazy Horse, I think of the buffalo. When I think of buffalo, I think of Crazy Horse, because they had a strong heart. And you know, you ever watch Wisconsin cows? When it gets cold and the wind starts blowing, what they do? They all get in a huddle like Green Bay Packers, you know, and their butts are sticking out. You know, and they huddle up that way. If you look at a buffalo, when the snow comes and when the wind comes, they turn straight into the wind, and they square off straight into that cold north wind. They have a strong warrior's heart, like Crazy Horse did. And so this song is called The Warrior's Heart. This is where I move slow. By the way, this guy over here to my left, this is Chris Mackus. We've been creating music for a while. He's going to be adopted one of these days into the family. Thank you. so we headed up to Grandma's land up there in the cold. It was cold in the summer. We got there in the summer. I was 16 years old, and it was pretty nice. We played all summer, you know, just being kids and doing the things that kids did, and we had a great time. And then winter came, and I hear you people in Wisconsin understand winter a little bit. It's even a little bit colder when you go north of here, and we were kind of running out of food, and the all the pap, the meat that we had put together in the summertime, that was all drying up, and there just was nothing left for us. So we started going out and hunting parties, but you know, it was, you know, we didn't measure it then, but it was cold. In blizzard weather, not just cold, but blizzard weather, blowing snow day after day after day after day, and the people were starving. And so what we did is we decided to go out in groups of two, and my father and I went out together, and we went out a full day leading our horses in the deep snow, and we were tired by the end of that first day, very, very tired. And so what we did is we camped out. We took our buffalo robes. We made a kind of lean-to on a creek bed and where there was shelter from the wind. And that's where we stayed that night. And I spotted a rabbit not too far away, and I went over and I killed him. And then I saw three other rabbits there. You know, I saw them. I chopped down the tree, and they were hiding in there. And so I killed all four of them. And after I killed them, we roasted them. And my dad and I ate all four of them. I'll tell you what, walking in the snow all day makes you real hungry. Those four rabbits went down well. And then we went off into a sleep. You know how that is. You get a little overload and away you go. And so we started to sleep. It was nighttime. It was time. I heard a coyote out in the distance. And this coyote was saying something. No, I know what he's saying. Oh, oh. It wasn't in words, but I could still hear something. What he said to me was, tomorrow morning when you wake up, you'll go up to the top of the ridge and you'll find some buffalo. But before you do, there's some two-leggeds up there, and you'll get to talk to them and hang out with them, and then you'll go get these buffalo. And so I called my dad, and he knew by now that there was, you know, something going on with me, and that medicine man thing had kind of taken hold that was in our family. And he said, I'll hold. And so the next morning we woke up early, and we got our horses, fed them some good cottonwood bark, and we took off the trail up the ridge. And sure enough, we got about halfway up the ridge. We saw two horses, you know, their tails splitting and their heads down. And then we saw a lean-to up the hill, buffalo robe lean-to. And there was an older man and a young man, just a little bit younger than me. And they were Lakota, and they were really glad to see us. But they were pretty unhappy because they'd been out for 2 days, and they hadn't had anything to eat at all. And so I told them about my vision. And they believed me too. And so we went up to the top of the hill. It's a real wooded area and a gulch down below. And we were looking, but the snow was blowing so badly that you couldn't see anything. It was like a white haze, you know. But every once in a while, it was like a curtain that opened up and you could see for a little bit, and then it closed back up. And it opened and it closed back up. So we were up there. We were talking about our people and how hungry they were and how sad we were that our people were starving, and what all the things that had happened to us, and just about then, as we were talking, that curtain opened up, and we saw the head of a big shaggy bull, you know, just looking. And the wind was blowing the other way, so he couldn't smell us and he couldn't see us because of the haze. Their eyes aren't that good either. So it closed back up, and then it opened up one more time, and there were seven more. And so we thought, wow, this is fantastic. So we all, you know, gave our offerings to the directions, you know, invited all the spirits in, like I did earlier, and said, you know, hoka hey, let's go get them. And so we took off, what was supposed to happen is now, because the old men were the better shots, so they were gonna wait for the buffalo to pass by, and then they were gonna take their shots, and then as soon as they got their shots in, and if there were any buffalo left, then we were supposed to, the young boys were supposed to go after them. So, I don't know, maybe they were nervous, maybe it was too cold, I don't know what it was, but we heard the shot and there was only one buffalo went down. So there were seven more to get. And we heard the old man say, "Okay, okay," which was our signal to get back on the horses and go after him. And it was unbelievable because you couldn't see anything in front of you, you know. You kind of hear him snorting. And but we got out close enough because the wind was blowing against us, so they didn't see us coming. When they did see us coming, they got startled. But instead of running away from us, they ran toward us. They went right past us. And that created an opening so the snow wasn't so deep. So it's like the buffalo were plowing the snow ahead of us for our horses. And so I had four buffalo ahead of me, and I was following this one particular, and I was going fast, he was going fast, and all of a sudden I saw a big puff, you know, phoop, and evidently the buffalo had fallen in a gulch, and then all the other three of them went in the gulch, and we were going too fast, and my horse went in the gulch. So I went in the gulch. So there you are. You know, we've got hooves. We've got four buffalo, one two-legged, one horse, and everybody's clawed and scratching. And you've got everything going, you know. And it's like, I just pushed myself up back off the bank just a little bit, you know, and I had my repeating rifle in my hand that they'd given to me, you know, and I just started firing, and you know what? I got all four of those buffalo. Unfortunately, I'd thrown off my mitten someplace in the foray, and my hands were frozen to the gun, and they had to pry them away to get them. So my hands were in pretty bad shape. They were frozen. Put four buffalo in, and then I then made my way back to camp to report to the old man what the young man had done. Found out that the other young man had shot three. So we had eight buffalo out there, you know, and we were so happy. And we decided that we would sing a song out of it. But I can improvise. We were so happy. And when we Lakota, we've got a song for everything. Now I say, well, how many Lakota does it take to put up a light bulb? It takes at least two. You've got to have one putting in the light bulb and the other one to sing the song. We got songs for everything, absolutely everything. I was at Sundance one time, and there was a song. And I loved the song, so I looked up the words, and it said, "I don't know what to do with this woman. I think I need a horse." Those were the words. Thank you song. So we all sang this thank you song.
Yeah.
So it took them all day to butcher those eight buffalo, and I couldn't help because my hands were frozen. We had a feast that night. We were happy. Happy to be able to take, you know, this food back. And so the next day we packed up our horses and got as much on our horses as we could get on. And then we just left the rest of it by a tree where it could easily be found. And we'd send some people back for it. And we went on our way. It took us about 2 days to get back. And we arrived at sundown the next day, and people saw us coming with all the food, and they were so happy. The people were so happy. And so they had a feast as well. And then we sang songs. But then we started talking about the way things were back when, before the white people came, back when we had our land. And we were sad. So I wrote another song. Thank you. know, I was there that day the crazy horse died. He'd been stabbed early in the morning, and I got a milk crate, and I stood up and looked in the captain's quarters, because that's where they had him. He was lying on the floor in the captain's quarters with blood oozing out of him all afternoon. Took a long time for his spirit to cross over. And there were a bunch of elders and medicine men gathered around him and praying, and we were all praying for that this great chief of ours, our leader, would survive. But about sundown, the medicine man took his pipe and he broke it. And what that means is he took the stem away from the pipe part. And when we end our ceremony, our pipe ceremony, that's what we do, because when you attach the stem to the pipe, you attach the male to the female, and that's where the power is. Like that song we sang about Mother God, Father God, that those two being together, that balance is when we're in ceremony, we acknowledge that power. So when he broke that pipe, then the ceremony was over. And I looked to the west, and I saw one eagle flying toward the west. And I knew that his spirit had crossed over in a good way. Now, we have all experienced those losses. We'll just talk about it this morning. And in our way, my teacher said, Creator saves his best surprise for last. When we think of crossing over, that's a beautiful thing. Now, here, listening to some of the stories of Ted Kennedy and his crossing, and how he crossed over with peace. And we help our people cross over. We help those spirits, because they're brand new little spirits, you know, now in the spirit world. And so they're babies. They're starting over now in the spirit world. We're, according to our way, we are spirits having a human experience. And that spirit comes in with our breath, and it leaves with our breath, that gift. And so we sing for that too, in a good way. Those spirits cross over. And we need to grieve, and in that way, we know we have to go through the seasons. Have to go through the seasons. And each season brings up memories, and each season must be grieved in that way in order to make the transition. And we're coming in now to the fall season. September, the changing leaves, and October, the month of the leaves letting go. And sometimes it's hard to let go. But, you know, you really don't see the leaves. Well, they hang on. Oak trees have a little trouble. It takes springtime sometimes for them to let go. But never see a tree going back and trying to super glue a leaf back on. We humans have a tendency to do that. But this song is about letting go. It's my final song, but it's about letting go. And there's an amazing story attached to this one as well. It's one of these songs that just came to me. It was a gift.
Yellowstone herd, there would be none.
first discovered us, there were 26 million Native Americans living in this country. It was already populated. And when there were 30 buffalo about that same time, we were down to almost 2 million. Now, that many of us had died for various reasons. But this is what I hear. Now, you can tell me whether I'm wrong or not. But this is what I hear. I hear that today there are more than 350,000 buffalo in the United States of America. 350,000. And it's growing. Now, they're all mixed up. They're all mixed breeds, and they're beefalo, and they're all kinds of things. They're kind of like the rest of us Indians, kind of all mixed bloods. But, you know, we have survived. And you know what? I heard something else. I heard that people actually enjoy listening to our songs and our stories again. And the people are seeking our ways again. This is a good thing. Now let me sign off on Black Elk a minute and say a couple words myself as Dennis. I do this because my elders have told me to. They've said to me, Dennis, you're mixed blood. You know how to walk in both these worlds. We can't do that. What happens is if the elders get off the reservation and they start doing a lot of things in the white community, they get all kinds of pressure from the tribal people. So I've been taught to teach. So you're a mixed blood. You go out and you do this. And I'm proud to do that. It's not without. It has its ups and downs, of course. I'll be doing quite a bit in this area. For some reason or other, the Creator has chosen this area for me. I didn't do it. The way I work is I pray, and whoever calls or wants me to come, I come. But this week, on Tuesday, I'll be at Audubon Nature Preserve. That's beautiful, 160 acres, Schwitz Audubon. I'll be doing a program on nature and spirituality. It's an hour and a half presentation I call Stones and Stories, and it's teaching. And that'll be in the afternoon, and I'll be repeating this in the evening at 7 o'clock. So, you know, please bring your friends. It's not that far away. I hang out at Hope Zavara's yoga studio a lot in Hartford, and we do a thing called the Yoga Jam, where we get together and we do music, live music to yoga practice, and that's at Copper Tree Wellness Center. Somebody's clapping back there. You know Hope?
I've
Wait, I don't have my glasses on. I probably know who you are, but I can't see. You know, that's a wonderful studio to hang out at. And so I'll be here quite a bit in this area, so please watch for me. And please sign, there's a thing next to my guitar case in the fellowship hall. Email sign up for this, and I can let you know where we're going to be when. And somebody told me a long time ago, you don't learn to play the flute, you follow the voice of the flute. And I've been following the voice of the flute for many years, and it's taken me to good places to meet good people. And thank you so much for having us here today to be with you. I wouldn't want to miss this. Big wish.
Please join Dennis and Chris after the service in the social hall for coffee and conversation. And let us leave this sanctuary in peace and friendship.
Thank you.